Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we will be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade paperback and graphic novel sales through Diamond to retailers for July 2010. And this was a pretty good month. This was actually, I believe, the third highest month in terms of dollars and fourth highest month in terms of units since the final order era began back in early 2003, in March of 2003. Now, part of that, of course, is we're getting 300 items on the list, whereas way back then we got, 10. Later it went to 25 ever so briefly, then 50, then 100, and of course now the 300. But even so, we've had, like, the 29th best month as recently as February of this year. So we are seeing some major differences. We're about over 100,000 units higher this month than we were, say, you know, December of 2009. So strong month overall. And we've talked about this, I don't know how many times, Chris, this three-way split that we tend to get.
Right.
DC, Marvel, everybody else. And this time it is fairly close to an exactly three-way split. DC came out on top with 33.63% of the dollars. Marvel right behind that with 32.21% of the dollars. Everybody else taking 34.16% of the dollars. So from the dollar perspective, very even split. From the unit perspective, not quite so much. DC again on top with 27.92%. Marvel with 26.25%, and everybody else accounting for 45.83%. Now, part of that comes down to both Marvel and DC had an item at about $75, $75 exactly for DC, $74.99 for Marvel, whereas most of the other publishers had things, their top price was below $20. There was like one or two around $50 or something. But that's part of why we see a bit of a difference between the dollars and the unit breakdowns. Big news this month, of course, is the third place publisher, which is Oni Press, which did 13.72% of the units and 8.37% of the dollars. And again, that's a pretty big difference between those percentages. But when you're talking in a $11.99, you know, price as the high point for those, and well, $11.95 for the low, that's a big difference than, again, that $75 price tag you've got on an item or two over at Marvel and DC. Now, no big surprise what was propping up Oni Press this month, and that, of course, was Scott Pilgrim. We'll talk about that when we actually get to the list of the top 300. Now, IDW had been doing pretty well, but we're seeing some moving around in this kind of middle tier of publishers. Obviously, Oni this month was a bit of an exception. But the fourth highest publisher this time around was Image Comics. It did 10.17% of the units and 7.86% of the dollars. Those are the only publishers to have over 10% of the units, and really only Marvel and DC had over 10% of the dollars this time around. You know, and once we get down past Dark Horse, Viz, Random House, IDW, and Dynamite, everybody is below a percent, both in terms of dollars and units.
I guess from what when I look at this list, the thing that strikes me, I mean, Oni Press, definitely that's an anomaly. It may stick around for next month as well. You know, time will tell when we look at the August numbers. But the number of new items from DC Comics only topping out at 25, I think that's very, very low. And in a month where we have Comic-Con, you know, they just did not push out a lot of product, where Marvel Comics had 48 new items. Did that surprise you at all?
Well, part of it is DC just had a low number of items. I mean, they topped the list with just 66 items on the list.
Yeah.
Versus the total of 94 that Marvel had, compared to 9 for Oni. So, I mean, we're all over the place on some of that. But, you know, we've said this many times, that DC has a really strong, you know, back list with mainly the Vertigo titles, but some of the other ones. You know, obviously right now the Green Lantern franchise is doing well. It's a little surprising that they had so few items, but I think also this was the month that they were releasing all those Darkest Night hardcovers.
Right.
So, I did it.
They're hedging their bets on Blackest Night. Right?
I know that. I hate it when I get that title wrong. It just, well, anyways. But again, since they were putting out so many of those hardcovers, I think they may have throttled back on the other new items they were releasing because they knew there was going to be some demand there, and they wanted, I think, to keep the retailer and the readers, you know, keep their budgets freed up for the Blackest Night stuff.
Okay, I can. Well, it paid off, didn't it?
Certainly, yes.
Yeah.
Big time. Now, one thing that's interesting is that we look at the average, you know, in terms of sales and dollars on a publisher-by-publisher basis, you know, we've got Image actually doing fairly well with an average of 1,784 units per item, DC with a 1,633, followed by Dark Horse with a 1,359, and then Marvel with a 1,078. And I believe if you take all of those combined, you hit 5,853 units, which does not match the average or whatever that Oni had this month of 5,881. So, you know, again, the average for Oni was just gangbusters. And again, surpassing the average collectively if you add together Marvel, DC, Image, and Dark Horse, which, of course, with an average you wouldn't want to do, but the point remains, it did damn well for Oni. And
right.
That's how come, with 9 items, you know, they were able to do, you know, half the percentage of units that Marvel did with 94 items. You know, it's not the volume of and quantity you come out with if you've got the right material at the right time. Anything else in the breakdown, or should we head over to the top 300?
No, let's do the top 300.
All right. This time around, we're going to go a little different. We're going to start with number 2. That, of course, it could be anything this month, really. I could come out with Scooby-Doo, and people might not be surprised.
Shocked. Before we get to number 2, let me give you a little story real quick. It kind of fits into number 2. I go on vacation this past weekend, took my family up to a little small town, it's, you know, a little vacation place in up north Michigan. And I go into this little bookstore, and wouldn't you know it, I'm looking around for a comic book section, and sure enough, they've got a comic book section, right?
Uh-huh.
One bookshelf, rather tiny, but let me tell you, John, it was packed. It's like this guy had been listening to us for the past 2 years, and he's picking what is on the shelf. It has been like the top 10 or top 15 every month for the past 2 years. I mean, he has got every single Walking Dead trade. He's got every single Fables trade. I mean, the Vertigo stuff, the Kirkmanverse. He's got all of these Blackest Night trade paperbacks and hardcovers out, right? And prominently displayed. They're not just sitting there. He also has the Scott Pilgrim books. He's got a couple of the Batman books and the Superman books. Basically, he had out all the major sellers, and I'm talking from Vertigo to Image to a couple of Hellboy trades and all the major event books coming around from DC and Marvel. And I thought from his perspective, you know, he knows his audience, and he knows he's in a little resort town, right? So when people come up, what do they want to get? They want to get what's out now and something that's good, that's going to have staying power.
Yeah.
Right, so he's not just throwing out a bunch of showcases or essentials, which take up space, as you know. But he has got the good books out there that the adults who are up there that happen to walk in with their parents, right, are gonna pick out and read and bring back to the cottage with them. which I thought was fantastic.
Well, if you think about it, that's a similar sort of a model that bookstores in airports use.
Yeah.
You got to have essentially the top sellers, the time-tested, the proven properties. Because, frankly, you literally don't have the space to be gambling on unknown stuff. You know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, and that's a smart way to run a store like that. You know, I've seen a ton of approaches. There was one gaming store here in town. I haven't been into it for a while because I'm not that much of a gamer, but I was working with some people who were hardcore in the Warhammer stuff, so they'd go there frequently. And they were telling me the store was branching out into comics. And this was a while back, about 2-3 years ago, I guess. And essentially what they had done is they had an employee who knew about comics, and they just took the shotgun approach. And it's like, okay, here's a bunch of Marvel titles, a bunch of DC titles, some Image titles, some Dark Horse titles, we're done. And, you know, for some books that works, but they wound up with a bunch of stuff, you know, Firestorm before that title ended, Hawk Girl, I think it might have been, and a few of those, you know, marginal titles that they just got stuck with.
Right.
Because they hadn't really done the research, they hadn't gone with, statistically speaking, to an average American audience, this is what's selling.
Right.
Now, even if you do that, you could get burned because maybe you're in an area that just doesn't like the Vertigo titles or the Kirkman verse or whatever. You know, every store is got the potential of major anomalies and being just unique in and of itself.
Right.
But statistically speaking, this is what's selling the best nationwide, so it should be a reasonably safe bet.
Right. And you know, another thing, you know, when this store is, it's not in the middle of nowhere, right? But when you're up there and you're a teenager or a 20-something or even our age, right, and you're up there for a long weekend and you walk into this store and you may think to yourself, for the novice out there, you know, why does this guy have every single Secret Invasion trade paperback out? Or why does he have all 12 Walking Dead trades out? Well, that's because the store owner knows that you're on vacation. And instead of putting a bunch of volume ones out there that everybody has read, you put out everything because eventually it will sell. Somebody will go up there and says, oh, you know, I haven't gotten around to volume 9 yet. I wonder if they have it. And sure enough, it's there on the shelf. And that guy is very smart in the way he's running his business up there as far as the comic book shelf goes.
Well, I'm really curious how much repeat business and the nature of that repeat business. Because I could see if I'm somewhere, you know, I'm out in essentially I don't say the middle of nowhere, but nice, you know, relaxing, you know, scenic America. And I don't have anything to read, and I've got time on my hands and want something to read. I could see where I'd do the same thing. I'd head to a comic store. Hey, what do you got? Oh, I've heard good things about Fables. I haven't read that. Or Why the Last Man, or, you know, Ex Machina, or a Kirkman title, or whatever. Pick up that first issue. Now, by going with time-tested material, there's a decent chance that I'd pick something up, I'd read it, I'd like it, I'd still have time on my hands.
Right.
Might even go back for that second volume.
Right.
Or if I go back for another vacation there, I could think, you know, there's this good store, I've got time to read, let me go find what they've got this time.
Exactly.
So, interesting approach.
Oh, you're right, yeah, they're not, I mean, stores like that, like you said, some stores throw it all against the wall and see what sticks. Other guys take the time to do their research, and it pays off.
Yeah. Now, second item on the list here is one of those that really every store in the country is going to carry. And if they weren't before, they certainly will be now.
Right.
Walking Dead Volume 12, Life Among Them, trade paperback, 16,627 units. Now, it's nice to have a month where I get to use the word thousand a number of times, because typically on this list, it's almost getting to the point where we go into the dozens. Now, let's face it, most months, this not only would have been the top seller, it would have beaten out the number two seller by a factor of about three. This is just a highly unusual month for a number of reasons, and the fact that Walking Dead came in a second spot with a new release is one of those. Now, it says something about the longevity of sales for this title, that this is, I don't say down, but this is off by 36.28% of the total loan sales for the previous volume, Volume 11. But again, that's not a drop in sales. That really goes down to how Volume 11 has simply had just a lot more time to go collect those units. And, you know, this month is a really great example of how that works out, because if we filter this list down to just the image titles, we see every other volume of Walking Dead on this list. It's interesting the order they're in. Obviously, Volume 12 is up there at the top. The next best-selling one is Volume 1, then 2, and then we do a little bit of alternating down here, because then we get 11, then 3, then 10, then 4, 5, 9, 6, 7, and then 8. So it's almost like there's two paths people are taking, and right now it's currently centering on that Volume 8 with the ones both before and after it selling better than that. And it's like some people are working from the front forward and some are maybe catching up from the back. I don't know. But we've seen this kind of a V shape, if you will, to the sales stuff, or an inverted V, I should say, a number of times. And really, a dozen trades for one title, you know, on the list for Image out of 22. I mean, Kirkman is just knocking things out of the park.
Right.
Out of the other Image titles on the list, we've got the fourth volume of Sword, we've got Fractured Fables, we've got Invincible Presents, Adam Eve and Rick Splode, Spawn Origins, Volume 6, Four Eyes, Volume 1, which is actually kind of surprising to see that on the list, because that's one that I think kind of flies under a lot of people's radar over at Image. We got Volume 2 and 1 of Chew. We also have Volumes 12 and 1 of Invincible. And again, kind of the most recent and the earliest showing up on the list there. And then the Pug graphic novel. So, decent amount of variety there. But Kirkman himself accounts for 30,789 estimated units out of Image's 39,238. So that means his titles, and that's both Walking Dead and those...
That's insane, man.
Well, and the Invincible ones. Yeah, that's 78.5% almost, 78.47% of Image's trade sales for the month. All Kirkman.
I forget, is he on the Image board, or does he have a higher position?
He's publisher at Image.
He is publisher. That's what I thought. I thought, and that was, what, a year ago they did that?
A little over.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought they brought
it. Actually, about a year ago. Trying to think when. I guess it was right after Comic-Con last year he got it, and right before then he did the video manifesto of everybody should self-publish or something.
Right.
I forget the exact timeline. Well, for him, very well.
Right, but I mean, how's that going for everybody else?
Not so much. But it's interesting because even if you split out just those two volumes of Invincible and that volume of Invincible Presents, that total up to 2,823 units, which is about 7.19% of Image's total for the month. Or to put it in perspective of the breakdown, that those three, you know, just the Invincible Universe stuff from him, if it had been its own publisher, would have been in rank 10 of the breakdown. Walking Dead, just those 12 volumes, would have come in at the 5th ranked publisher for the month. You know, he's knocking it out of the park here.
You know, in a way, I mean, so much attention is given to DC and Marvel. You know, I'm kind of very happy that this is with another company. Because you wonder if this was like an Icon title at Marvel or something like that, or a Vertigo book, right? And, you know, this gives me hope that other publishers can make it.
Totally, totally. I think, though, that part of his success was the fact he had some visibility initially just through Image.
Right.
Because Image, let's face it, the Image Central line has gone through the shotgun approach dozens of times.
Right.
And the other titles that came out around the time of Invincible and Walking Dead started were Dominion from Giffen, which I think later went over to Boom. There was a Jay Farber title. There were like three or four other titles that floundered for a couple of months and then just kind of went away. So, you know, you look at the sales curve on both Walking Dead and Invincible, and there was a point where, you know, within the first 6-7 issues, I think he's even gone on record as saying he thought about just, you know, stopping the titles. It just
right.
wasn't panning out. But he stuck with it, he persevered, they turned around because it took a little time to build up that audience. And look at how the damn thing's doing. I mean, it's doing great.
And now he says that Walking Dead, he never wants it to see it end.
Well, golly, you know, it's coming in money hand over fist every month.
Right.
What's going to be real interesting is, again, this is the July data, okay? We then have August, September, October, with October being the month leading into the Halloween premiere of the TV show. And so you've got some interest building up because of that in, you know, up till and certainly in October. And then November, where people who saw the thing may think, wow, this is brilliant, I've got to go get the trades. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Mm-hmm. But given how well Walking Dead does consistently just in and of itself, certainly one could argue that, well, some of this month is because people know that the TV show's coming out, whatever. I'm not really thinking this has anything to do with that. We've seen these kinds of sales with every volume showing up repeatedly in the past for Walking Dead. So I'm thinking that once the show is really getting strongly pushed on AMC, once it's actually on the air, we could see just some massive numbers. Now, it's also possible that if there are massive sales, we might not see them because they could be in the mass market, not in the direct market. Time will tell. It's going to be interesting to watch that title. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think he's doing some good work, but there was a point closer, I'm going to say issue 48 or whatever, with the governor storyline and stuff like that, where it was just every issue I'm thinking, damn, I didn't see that coming. That was brilliant. That was a great swerve, whatever. I'm not having those oh wow moments as much as I used to. Now, part of that may have been he's overtaxed himself being publisher, writing other books, etc. I don't know. But I'd really like to see that title, essentially, for lack of a better term, rejuvenated. And that's kind of ironic for a bunch of, you know, zombies walking around. But you get the idea.
Right.
So, that's the number two title this month. Let's go ahead and talk about the number one title, and maybe it's no surprise to a lot of people, and that's Scott Pilgrim Volume 6, Finest Hour graphic novel, 21,305 units. Now, that's up only a little under 2%, or just under 400 units, from the total known sales of the fifth volume. So, you know, there's some interesting dynamics kind of going on with that. But what's really fascinating is this is the first time, and unless Walking Dead repeats this later in the year, maybe the only time, we see one title take over half of the top 10 slots on the list. Because that was ranked number one. Down at rank number 5, we've got volume 1. At rank number 7, we've got volume 2. Rank number 8, we've got volume 5. Rank number 9, we've got volume 4. And at rank number 10, we've got volume 3. That's 6 volumes of Scott Pilgrim in the top 10. Note again that we've got kind of that inverted V with the most recent selling the best, the first issue selling the next best, and then kind of stair-stepping back between 2, 5, 4, and 3, centering again around that middle point. Now, we've had other times, you know, Civil War will have a flood of trade paperbacks or, you know, some other event, whatever. This is the first time I can think of a single title has dominated the top 10 list.
Right.
Scott Pilgrim this month accounted for 51,138 units. That's the equivalent of the fourth, you know, that would have ranked it at slot 4 on the publisher breakdown this month on the trade side.
Hmm.
And that's insane.
Right.
Definitely unprecedented. We've had lots of reorders on these things in the past. Never so high on the list. I haven't seen the film. I haven't read the graphic novels, for that matter.
Neither have I, yeah.
The impression I've gotten, not really following the box office that closely, it came out, it did okay, and then kind of, I don't want to say fizzled, but didn't really set the world on fire after that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of that is there was some other competition with the Expendables and stuff like that, but it's likely that these are going to, you know, go back to kind of, okay, we know who Scott Pilgrim is, and it's going to have a certain almost evergreen status, potentially. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But further down, lower in the list, until that that DVD comes out. Maybe we'll see a resurgence at that point. I'm not expecting this to have the routinely up near the top of the list aspect that we had seen with some other, you know, highly successful tie-ins to movies. And I'm thinking specifically Watchmen and 300 in those cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be around for August, but I don't know about September. You know, like we said with the other books, we'll have to wait and see when the numbers come out. But I could see a couple of lasting effects. But isn't O'Malley's done with this series, though, right? There's not any more coming out.
Not that I'm aware of, but again, I don't read Scott Pilgrim. I really don't follow
right.
it. I do know that there was a bit of annoyance, I'll go with, from certain retailers about the way Volume 6 was released.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, it being released on a Tuesday to bookstores, and comic stores could release it on that Tuesday, provided they met certain conditions, which included ordering a certain amount of some other book, which I forget which one it was off the top of my head.
Right.
And basically, certain retailers, and I forget which ones, to be honest, and really it doesn't matter, but some retailers thought that, hey, you know, we've been supporting this since its inception. We're what helped build that audience that got that movie, that's getting this hype for this Volume 6, and this is the thanks we get.
Now, why did they want to do that? Why release it on a Tuesday?
Tuesday is new release day in bookstores.
Oh, okay.
And there's been a lot of talk circulating in the comic arena about should comics shift to a Tuesday release day, putting it on the same day as books, novel, or books, DVDs, music, and other such things.
I think that went through this week.
No, what went through is a Tuesday shipping, a day early shipping, still for release on Wednesday.
Okay.
But for a while, it was looking like Diamond may actually shift new release day to Tuesday.
Okay.
But they announced, I believe yesterday, that they're going to start getting stuff to retailers on Tuesday for them to release on Wednesday. They're going to have a mystery shopper program to kind of enforce that.
Right. I was going to say that you'll probably get some stores putting product out on Tuesday night, you know, right before they close or something like that. But yeah, if they have mystery shoppers, then they'll stop that, right?
It fundamentally changes the timeline for retailers in a very favorable way for everybody.
Right.
Because, you know, back when I used to work at a local store here in town in college, this was back when New Comic Day was still on Friday. So as you can tell, it was many, many years ago. We'll say 20. Because, yes, I am that old. And what would happen is I would get up at the crack of dawn, because I was young and could do that back then. I would head over to the comics store, meet up with the owner. We'd drive down to the bus station, pick up the boxes of comics, head back over to the store, spend a couple hours getting them out of the boxes, counting everything out to make sure we got what we were supposed to get, doing the pull lists, and the store had a ton of them back then. I'm sure it's got even more now. And depending on when we got the books, how many we had to pull, how many we got that week, it could be anything from, hey, we've got time to go have breakfast before the store opens, to the store is open and we're still working, kind of. And it also depended on how many people we had pulling.
Right.
And it got to be a hectic morning. And if you think about it, is that really the way you want store owners and managers and clerks to be starting what is most likely the busiest day of the week for them? Because that's when, you know, the new books are out. That's when the hardcore customers come in. That's when a lot of their product is sold. It makes sense to move that back a day, let them get the stuff, and while they're got the store open and managing customers on an otherwise slow day, because let's face it, it's been a week since New Comics. People aren't, you know, hounding the store on Tuesday because they know they can't get the new stuff. It didn't come out till Wednesday. This gives the owners and managers and stuff time to unpack the stuff, count the stuff. Oh, wait, we got shorted. Hey, let's call Diamond. Let's get ahead of this. Let's get the reorders in or whatever. Let's take care of the damages. Spend a little bit more time and a more relaxed pace to do the pull lists and all that stuff. If that means they work after hours on that Tuesday, do stuff after the store closes even versus when it's open, hey, that works too. But it allows them to come into a store on New Comic Day, Wednesdays now, where things are just ready. They're not having to scramble to get stuff ready before the customers start walking right in the door. That puts them in a better frame of mind. Heck, it even potentially gives them time to read a couple of comics before the customers come in and say, hey, what did you think of that? Because typically the answer would be, I don't know, it just came.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have you walked in on a store on Wednesday and it's like, hey, do you have this comic? Oh, yeah, it's still in the box. We haven't gotten it to it yet. And then you have to go back to work. You know, it's like, what a pain in the ass that is. I mean, for everybody.
Exactly. And it's often through no fault of the store because UPS was delayed or traffic was bad, you know, whatever.
Think of the snowstorms we have up here and the bad weather that we have here.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's awful.
And it builds in a bit of a buffer there because if you've got that, then the store may still be scrambling on that Wednesday, but they at least have the books Wednesday versus losing out when their customers came in and suffering because of that.
Right.
So, you know, there still is the issue of potentially bookstores being able to scoop the comic stores, as arguably might have been the case with Scott Pilgrim for some stores. But I think the day early release is just a win for everybody. All right, so that takes care of 7 of the 10 items on the top 10. We're going to expand our scope just a little. We're going to talk about the other half of the items on the top 15 because they all have something in common. That's right. They're the type of title I usually get wrong and say Darkest Night when I mean Blackest Night. Because at rank number 3, we got Blackest Night hardcover. 13,069 units. Good sales, but given how well that series did, if it had done higher than that, I wouldn't have been surprised. I don't think these are bad. What's impressive is we got a number of these hardcovers on the list. At rank 4, we got the Blackest Night Green Lantern hardcover, having done 8,216 units. Rank number 6, we got the Blackest Night Green Lantern Corps hardcover, doing 6,719 units. Dropping all the way out of the top 10 down to rank 11, we've got Blackest Night Black Lantern Corps Volume 1 hardcover. It did 5,414, followed immediately by the Volume 2 of Blackest Night Black Lantern Corps, having done 5,309 units, followed by Blackest Night Rise of the Black Lanterns hardcover, 4,834 units, followed again by Blackest Night Tales of the Corps hardcover, 4,802 units, and then rounding out the top 15, we've got the Green Lantern Rage of the Red Lanterns. This time it's a trade paperback, not a hardcover. It did 4,467 units. So, obviously, we've got a lot of Black Lantern stuff coming out this time, and it did a total of 52,839 units, putting it just a hair above how Scott Pilgrim did for the month. So, I think they took a little bit of a chance releasing all of these Blackest Night things as hardcovers and releasing them in fairly rapid succession, really in the span of a three-week period, I believe, because I think all of this came out either on July 8th, 14th, or 21st.
Right.
So I think that may have been a little bit of a hit on some people's budget and stuff, versus had this been spread out a little bit more and had it been done originally in trade paperback. That having been said, I think this was a smart move for them to do. I still think they should have done little free, you know, lantern-type plastic things with these. I'd have double-dipped, but, you know, hey, they didn't, so I didn't have to. Of course, along those lines, they did showcase over at San Diego at the DC Direct booth the little light-up lanterns that are going to go with the light-up rings.
Oh, that's cool. I saw the light-up rings.
I got that set. I'm real happy with them.
Yeah.
Bob was a little underwhelmed by them, and I can see how that was.
Right.
But when you get essentially the same sort of a ring and a light-up lantern, and I think they're doing them, you know, obviously in matched sets, starting with the orange, the orange one for Greed, gosh, go figure, for, I think they decided $35 for that.
Now, can you replace the battery or the light in there?
You can replace the battery in the ring. You cannot replace the light.
Okay.
And they give instructions as to how to get to the battery, how to flip it out.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, that's kind of cool then. Okay.
Yeah. Because the rings are similar to the free ones. They're hollowed out. The the part with the logo twists off to where you can get to the battery if you need to.
Okay.
And the back of it has a like a screw thing that if you've got it at 12 o'clock, it's on. If you've got it at like 1 o'clock, it's off.
Right.
So you can not wear out the batteries if you don't want to.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So I was pleased with it. You know, I think this is really showing, though, how they took a franchise that had always been around but never a central one and turned it into one of the key franchises right now at DC.
You know? Oh, absolutely it is. Yeah.
Personally, I think they've... I'm going to say either... I'm debating if I want to go with missed an opportunity or made a mistake, and I'm going to go with made a mistake. Certainly missed an opportunity with how they're handling it on the monthly side. They've had Green Lantern, they've had Green Lantern Corps, they just started Green Lantern Emerald Warriors. Bob and I reviewed the first issue of that.
And Brightest Day, that's kind of like... would you consider Brightest Day a Green Lantern title or a DCU title?
I consider that a DCU title.
It is, okay.
Because while it ties into that storyline, it's not really featuring... Obviously, you've got people with the White Lantern stuff, but to me, that's
right.
Meta-arc, big-picture story.
Right.
Whereas the other three books are all featuring guys with rings and stuff like that.
Okay.
The mistake they made is when they started this new title, it's yet another Green Lantern title. I love Green Lanterns. I like Guy, I like Hal, I like Kyle, I like John, I like Kilowog, I like them all. I'm big Green Lantern fan. But do we need three Green Lantern titles, particularly one at $3.99?
Mm-hmm.
Or might it have been a wiser choice to give it some other name to where you could have Red Lantern showing up, something saying, hey, we're going to spotlight some of the Star Sapphire crew or some of the Sinestro Corps?
See, that was when this whole thing was taking place last summer, everybody figured, okay, now you have this expanded light universe kind of thing going on. How are you going to showcase these other groups? And that was one of the ideas that was kicked around, you know, 9-10 months ago, that they were going to have like a Green Lantern, you know, like an old Tales of the Green Lantern Corps, Tales of the Light Corps, or whatever,
right?
And showcase all these other groups in various forms in various histories throughout the DC universe.
Well, and do you know what the obvious title would be for something that covered all the Corps?
Oh, you're going to nail it. I know what.
Guardians of the Universe.
Guardians of the Universe.
I mean, to me, that would have been a smarter move because it instantly distinguishes itself from the other two Green Lantern titles.
Right.
Now, it's okay, Guy's got his own book with Emerald Warriors, but really what makes that fundamentally different than what he was doing in Green Lantern Corps?
Right.
And, again, I expect it to do well. I don't think they completely, you know, botched it or whatever, but long-term, I think they could have done better to really leverage that expanded nature of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think calling it something that, again, was still clearly evocative of the cores or whatever would have been a problem at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people would have gotten a clue.
Totally. Particularly given how high profile it's been.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting on the monthly side is Brightest Day has been doing very well. It actually was the second highest seller this month on the comic side. So when we get to where that starts getting collected and trade, it'll be interesting to see how it does.
Mm-hmm.
I expect it will do better than Trinity 52 or Countdown did.
Yeah.
Now, I certainly don't expect some of these numbers like we're seeing on the Green Lantern stuff. But, you know, it's interesting that out of the top 15 items, we essentially have three different things: Walking Dead, Blackest Night, and Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very
so,
different things.
But three for 15
right.
items. They're very easily groupable,
right.
is my point. I mean, obviously, Walking Dead, nothing like Scott Pilgrim, nothing like the Blackest Night stuff. With the Blackest Night, we got hardcore superheroics, classic type stuff in that respect. Walking Dead, totally not that with the I don't say the horror genre, but again, more the slice of life survival tale kind of a thing. And against Scott Pilgrim, nothing like either of the other two. And it's interesting because I think we're at a point where each title coming out, I think, has a greater need to differentiate itself in the market. to where it's not just lumped in of, oh, that's another thing like this, that, or the other.
Right.
Such as Emerald Warriors being just another Green Lantern book. So it's interesting. I think a lot of why this month was so strong is, I mean, throughout the top 15, we're still well above 4,000 units on every title.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good sign. It really is.
That's an astounding sign.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've got 120,000 plus units just in those top 15 items. Now, to put that into perspective, you know, we had months where the entire top list wasn't much above that. Now, granted, the top list was a handful of items, too, so that's part of it. But, I mean, it's unusual to have this strong, you know, this many strong sellers at the top of the list.
Well, we've got 18 books with 4,000 units or above. And then if you look at rank 19, 20, and 21, they're in the 3,000 and up range. And that is BPRD, Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man, Volume 1, and then Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. And then after that, it's 3,000 units and below.
Well, and it's interesting because that Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, is 3,025 units.
Right.
Whereas that BPRD Volume 13 there was 3,967
right.
units. So even right.
right
there, there's a huge discrepancy.
There's your drop-off, right.
You know, it's interesting how at times they're almost, for lack of a better term, dead zones in the sales charts.
Right.
You know, we don't have anything between that 3,300 and 3,900 area. You know, there are parts where we just seem to have these voids. It's like, oh, what? And I don't know what that means. Does it mean that there's this group of X hundred people that either all get something or all don't? I mean, I see this happen a lot over on the monthly side, where that 80,000 to 90,000 range, give or take, nothing's there usually, you know? Some months there are, some months there aren't, but there's usually a sizable 10,000 unit gap somewhere near the top of that list, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... There's a lot of dynamics going on with these sales because every reader is making up his or her own mind as to what to get for a variety of reasons. They're trying to get them at stores where the retailer's making up their own minds as to what to get for, you know, totally different reasons. And it comes down to when things all fall together, we get these 21,000 unit sales for Scott Pilgrim. You know, when things don't really fall together, we get, you know, a couple hundred units. So it's...
Right. Well, just also touching on the two Whatever Happened books, and I'm talking about the Superman one and then the Batman one, you know, even when the hardcovers came out a few months ago, or almost a year ago now, I think I told you I was not surprised to see that the Batman one had done better as far as number of units sold than the Superman one, because the Neil Gaiman stuff with Batman, a lot of that had not previously had been collected before, whereas the Alan Moore Superman stuff, that's been reprinted over and over and over and over and over, you know, with the two-issue storyline in Superman in Action and then the Action Comics Annual number 11.
Well, not only that, but think about the timing of the Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow storyline.
Right.
This was right around Crisis. There was this whole area of, well, what are we doing with Superman, what are we not? Because it wasn't right after Crisis that they did Man of Steel and all that. They actually
right.
had a couple of months where in like DC Comics Presents, it was a post-Crisis, pre-Crisis mishmash almost.
Mm-hmm.
And the Superman titles were not selling gangbusters at this point. There have been a lot of times where, you know, particularly more Superman and Wonder Woman, a little less so with Batman, but they're just titles that are there. They're putting decent stuff out, but it's just not clicking for whatever reason.
Oh, you remember Action Comics Weekly? I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, I think the backups is what made that book sell. You know, I mean, I remember those Superman issues, you know, when he appeared in those things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Action Comics Weekly is, it had the fallacy, the, not the fallacy, but the problem every anthology has of you're paying for six stories, two of which you might be interested in.
Exactly.
One, you know, it just, it can work. I think it rarely does. The one I'm looking forward to along those lines that we'll actually see on this list, because typically anthologies are usually on the monthly side, and that's going to be the Top Cow First Look trade paperback that they had in last month's previews.
Okay.
What they're doing, and they're charging, I think, $4.99 for it. Six issues. It's the first issue of six different titles they're going to do. It's going to have Genius, it's going to have, I forget what the other ones were. Bob did a really good interview with the publisher of Top Cow on it. And this, I think, was just a stroke of genius for them. Because some of these are coming out of the pilot season stuff, some of this is just other titles they're releasing.
Wait, what's this called?
It's Top Cow First Look. It's a trade paperback, and they're going to have the first full issue of six different stories. In
and
this
it's
trade
for $5.
If $5.
Yeah.
I mean, on a per-issue basis, it's less than a dollar an issue.
Yeah.
You get to try out these things. And again, I forget off the top of my head exactly what was within them. If you look at, if you go download the preview spotlight interview for last month, I think it was, pretty sure, we cover all of that as well as the pilot season stuff. If it wasn't last month, it was the month before. I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But this was something that when I was flipping through previews, I nearly missed. But Bob pointed it out, and I'm like, well, damn. How can I turn that down?
Right.
You know, even if you just want one of them, you're trying out five other stories for minimal cost. It makes sense to do.
Well, that's what Radical Comics did before. You know, they tried that with their first few trade paperbacks. And even, you know, and we periodically see the $9.99 trade.
That's different.
That is different. You're right.
Because it's one thing to do, like Vertigo tends to do, have that first volume at a doorbuster price, blow that out at a low cost to get people in the series. What this is an easy sampler pack for half a dozen titles.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you only like one or two, you've still, you know, justified the cost of it. And I'm really curious to see how it plays out when they actually re-release the first issue of these, because they realize we're collectors. We're probably going to want that first issue as well, and how those comics sell. But that's the one case where I think an anthology, brilliant move. Because, again, that's how I think they should have been doing the pilot season stuff, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do it that way. Everybody gets all of them. They could read all of them. They can vote. Theoretically equally well informed on all of them. But that's one of those cases where I think Top Cow is doing some really good stuff. I've recently become a big fan of their universe with The Darkness, Witchblade, Artifacts, and, you know, all those titles. Yet, you know, we're not really seeing them showing up on this list this month. You know, in future months I'll try to keep a better eye out for some of those titles. But they're trying to really push the envelope on how they distribute stuff, how they package stuff, as well as just the kind of stuff they're doing.
Mm.
But the pilot season stuff by nature arguably is a bit of a shotgun approach. The difference is they're letting the market try to decide what works, what doesn't. And I think that's just a smart move.
All right. What else we got?
Let's see. We got all manner of stuff. The bottom of the list this time around was 337 units. It was a reorder of Hellboy. Actually, it was a number of things. It was a reorder of Hellboy Volume 9. It was a reorder of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8 Volume 6. Volume 3 of Astonishing X-Men. And Ben 10 Alien Force Doom Dimension Volume 2 graphic novel, which, unfortunately for that, was not a reorder. But
it made the list.
Those all came down with the lowest diamond order index and all did right around that 337 unit mark. So that's the bottom of the list. We got the usual Vertigo books throughout. I'm thinking I saw on IDW, one of the Star Trek books in here, which surprised me with how it was doing. Yeah, it was Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Fool's Gold.
Really?
And it did 673 units. I gotta be thinking there are a couple of more fans of Star Trek Deep Space Nine than that.
Yeah.
I gotta imagine there's probably more people that worked on Star Trek Deep Space Nine than that. And it was a good story. I mean,
it came in at 150. I mean, that's right in the middle.
Right at the middle, and did a couple hundred units.
Yeah.
You know, you go up to rank 103, which is another IDW title, of Archie Pureheart the Powerful, Volume 1, 971 units. So even around that, you know, once you get out of that top 100, you know, we're doing under 1,000 units. Actually, rank 100, which is Nana, Volume 21 from Viz, 980 units. So,
do you read the Star Trek IDW stuff?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I just got the Star Trek Omnibus Volume 2, which is the original series books, like Klingons Blood Will Tell,
right.
The Star Trek Year 4 stuff, and I read Blood Will Tell last night, and I was surprised. I didn't know what to expect from it. But I thought it was really cool how it tied in the original series TV show and all the events with the Klingons on the TV show. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, I was just reading the Star Trek Burden of Knowledge, first three issues of that just came out. That's another one with the classic crew, Kirk and company.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I would explain these to, you know, fans of the old show, imagine if you were watching a 6-episode season that were half-hour episodes, yet still tried to tell a full story, get to the planet, do the stuff, figure out the moral of the story, go on, kind of, you know, again, classic old-school Star Trek in all the right ways.
Mm-hmm.
You got the character moments, you've got artists that are doing a really good job depicting the characters, they look like the actors. The guys doing the dialogue are nailing the voices. They sound like the characters. And the stories fit the tone of the old show. You know, and what I like with the Burden of Knowledge stuff is at the end of issue 3, what's presumably going to lead into that fourth issue, goes back to the story in the first issue that they had set up. So they've got threads that are kind of moving between them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think John Byrne's doing some great stuff over on the Dr. McCoy series, or really any Star Trek book he touches. He's got a definite love of it. So I think they're doing some really good, solid Star Trek work these days at a time where there's not many other ways to really get your Star Trek fix right now.
Right.
And, I mean, there's the Star Trek Online game, there's the novels, I mean, there are the DVDs, of course. But in terms of new stories and stuff like that, in a quick, easy, accessible manner, the comics are doing a really great job and are not finding an audience. You know, they're selling, you know, in the few thousand units or whatever over on the trade, or the monthly side. But this is one of the reasons I'm thinking that they're not really finding the audience, because, I mean, that Burden of Knowledge, the second issue did 5,823 units, Star Trek McCoy issue 4, 6,639 units, the movie adaptation, 5,090 units. Now, granted, this day and age of DVDs, who needs a movie adaptation? Yes, I did buy it. I will admit to this. But the point remains, there got to be a lot more Star Trek fans out there, and is the problem that they don't know comics exist? They don't know Star Trek comics exist? I don't know. It's certainly not the quality. I think IDW is doing a good job with that license.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing nothing but good things about the Leonard McCoy Frontier Doctor, too.
I'm loving that.
It's kind of very serious, but very lighthearted as well.
It's a lot of fun, and the conceit of that thing is McCoy's off between the TV series and the movie, and he's writing letters to Kirk periodically as some of the narration of here's what he's off going and doing and stuff. And they've had a couple of times where they've been able to tie in multiple things very nicely together. Everything from Gary Seven to the original number one from the pilot to, you know, on up and down. So the guys doing the Star Trek stuff know the franchise, you know. I'm at a loss as to, you know, either they're not advertising where the Star Trek fans really are, or Star Trek fans have moved on to the new crew. I don't know. But that's one of those where I think sales could be better.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of places like that.
Well, for other Star Trek fans out there, I talked a little bit to Chris Ryle, and I kind of teased him. I said, you know, you're putting out so much Star Trek, you know, you really ought to get the license from Checker regarding the Gold Key stuff. And he didn't say one way or another, but he didn't put it this way. He didn't say no, you know. So if he can get the Checker license or the Gold Key license from Checker and put those out into a series of, I don't know, what, 4 6x9 omnibus style books, that would be really nice to have, because Checker has yet to do volume 6, and that would be the last one to wrap up the Gold Key stuff. But, you know, volume 5 came out, what, 3 years ago? You know?
I can see where they might want to do that. Frankly, I would think they'd be better off going to a hybrid format for the Star Trek stuff, halfway between comic book size and trade paperback size, maybe a 64-page thing or whatever. Something to where they're essentially doing almost full episode-length stories.
Right.
Maybe not have them come out every month or something. Maybe do it with rotating stuff to where once a month we're getting a you know, something to where we rotate through the different crews. We get a Kirk story every other month or something. We get a Next Gen story every couple of months, maybe Deep Space Nine. And something that feels like we're getting either a full hour episode or maybe a 2 hour TV movie equivalent. Because I think that would have enough meat to it story wise to get people a little bit more interested and to make it feel a bit more canonical.
Right.
And I would work with Paramount on that. I would get this stuff to where it's like, we want this to be treated as if it is part of the TV canon as much as practical. And for Paramount to be pushing that this stuff is out there. Because right now, it's one of the few things kind of keeping old school Star Trek alive. And as much as I loved the new movie and as much as I'm looking forward to the sequel to it, the reality is they've got a very vibrant universe on the pre-history change side of it that'd be a shame for them to just let loose of. And it would make a good tie-in with the online game.
Right, true.
Okay, other things we got on the list, a couple items. Rank 86, we got Azrael Death's Dark Knight trade paperback. I believe that's the first volume, 1,157 units. This is doing, frankly, not a whole lot better on the monthly side. Sales like this are not going to keep this title around. I'm kind of expecting this to get folded into the Batman Inc. Storyline at some point and have this title just potentially go away.
Another Azrael title go away. Surprise.
I know. It's hard to imagine. Yeah, we've got a number of things like that where they're not doing too great on the monthly side, and a lot of these things aren't doing really any major movement on the trade side, and they'll show up the once, they'll do okay, and they'll never show up again. And when we've got the list going down to, you know, the mid 300 units, that means it's just not selling any appreciable number of comics for the or number of units, I should say, in the direct market. Now, there are some that each and every month are going to be at that 300 units or whatever, and that does add up. But, you know, you need more than that. We got a couple of Final Crisis trades. We got Civil War. We've got one of the other event books over Siege, I guess it was.
Siege, right.
A couple of those actually from Marvel and stuff. So we're seeing some of those. Overall, nothing else that really jumps out at me saying, wow, this is just really unusual down at the bottom of the list, because really we saw a lot of that up at the top. I think as we get towards a couple of more movies coming out over the next year or so, everything from Avengers, you know, on up and down, it's going to be real interesting to see how some of those go and to see if there's any real traction that those properties get, you know, on the direct market side. Because typically, the trades will get a little bit of a bump, certainly like we saw this time around with Scott Pilgrim, but there's no real lasting impact that can be usually attributed directly to the movie.
All right.
Because oddly enough, movie fans like movies, not comics. I don't get that, but, you know, hey. On the pricing, the most popular price this time around was $14.99, with 49 items on the list with that. 44 items were at $19.99. 36 were at $24.99. 32 were at $9.99. I like that. And then 22 at $17.99. We do have a couple of items over $25, but really we only had about three dozen with that, and 14 of those, again, were the $29.99. So for a while, about a couple of years back, we were seeing a lot of the high-ticket items coming out. Those are much fewer and further between these days. But I'm cheap. I'm okay with that. So again, this was one of the best months we've had, you know, since the Final Order era began. Again, part of that is it's only been the last year or two that we've had 300 units. But even so, you know, you take that bottom 100 units, and it is only, you know, it's under 41,000, under 42,000 units. Really, everything from rank 101 on down is 111,420 units. So, I mean, that does add up, certainly. But that's beaten out by the top, you know, 10 or 15 this time around. 15, I guess. Hands down. So,
right.
Having a longer list, certainly helpful, gives us a lot more visibility. But it doesn't really change the dynamic of the sales trends in terms of the month by month all that much, or you know. So yeah, that's pretty much what I got.
What did you like that you bought this month, off the top of your head?
Oh wow, that's a tough question.
All right, well let me tell you what I liked.
What did you like?
I finally got around to reading the. Well, as you know, I get the Premier hardcovers.
Uh huh.
I finally got around to reading The Infinity Gauntlet. And
good
I also
stuff.
Read the sequel, which I guess was the sequel, which was The Rebirth of Thanos Premier Hardcover.
Actually,
or is it Infinity Quest?
There was Infinity Quest, which I thought led up to some... I'm getting the order of these
yeah.
wrong. I was going to go with Infinity War as
That's
the
it.
Sequel.
Okay.
And Infinity Crusade as the... Why did they do a third one?
Right. Okay. Well, in any event, I read them back to back, and I'm very happy I did. I haven't read them, never read them, really. And, yeah, I'm really glad I did. It was a nice little event.
I recommend those. By and large, those were really good, particularly the Infinity Gauntlet stuff and Infinity War. Out of those spun Warlock and the Infinity Watch,
yep.
where Warlock, Pip, and a couple others got one gem apiece, essentially. That lasted, I think, about 3 years. That was some good stuff.
Well, and what I read this past weekend, I finally got around to reading the Avengers Kree-Skrull War. So I'm really into the whole Marvel Cosmic. And this is, it kind of, everything stems out of that storyline.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, Kree-Skrull War is some good classic stuff. And part of it for me is I've been just reading a ton of comics lately. I've got two short boxes here that I've filled with comics I've read in the last, well, probably since I got back from San Diego, so in the last month or so. I've just been trying to catch up on my reading and stuff, and there's been a lot of really good stuff. Again, I'm liking the Star Trek stuff, really digging Brightest Day, I think that's good. Secret Warriors had some good Nova stuff, so if you're liking that, check the first couple issues of that. Fantastic Fours is some really solid stuff. I was a little let down by the JLA-JSA crossover in Justice League and JSA, but to me that's a, kind of a high bar to reach because I really like the classic crossovers back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Flash is some great stuff. Legion of Superheroes I'm really liking. I didn't care for what happened in one of the recent issues, or what was revealed to have happened in one of the issues of Adventure Comics recently with Saturn Girl. That kind of left a sour taste for me. I didn't think the character would have or should have done that, but that's just me. What else? I mean, I'm reading just a ton of stuff. Bob and I have talked a bit about the Superman and the Wonder Woman stuff. Superman, I going to be real curious to see how those trades do, because frankly I expect the sales to drop off quite a bit on the monthly side. Wonder Woman I think has a lot more potential of doing okay on the sales side, because frankly I think that's not a bad story.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a pretty good story.
You know, whether it is Wonder Woman or not, to me it's close enough.
Yeah.
It's the whole warrior princess thing, which she's been played as for quite some time, so I'm not seeing anything there that makes me think, wow, this is distasteful or this is really out of character. Whereas when Superman's going around pontificating and being a little bit of a jerk at times, yeah, it just isn't clicking too well for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, tons of stuff that I'm reading. But that should be no big surprise. So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, like I said, this week I've got the Avengers Kree-Skrull War coming up probably next week. I've got, well, let's see, after Labor Day, I should say, I'm going to be doing my year or my summer movie in review section, where I basically go over all the summer movies that came out. And if you want to read more, here are the trade paperbacks or comics that kind of tie into the movies.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. Something a little different. Good. I did it last year for the first time, and it was really popular. I got a lot of great feedback from it, so I decided to do it again.
Makes sense.
What about you?
Let's see. We've got coming up, we're doing going to talk about on the Weekly Comic Spotlight, Superman Secret Origins 6, Namor First Mutant number 1, and Guarding the Globe number 1. I actually just read those before we started recording. Then we're going to have the previews teleconference on September 10th. We pushed it back a week so we wouldn't, you know, have issues with Labor Day weekend and stuff. And then we'll be doing the previews spotlight and all that kind of stuff. And then for Weekly Comics Spotlight 160, we're going to talk about Freedom Fighters number 1, Hercules Twilight of a God number 4, and Incorruptible number 9. And really, I think Mark Waid's just doing some great stuff with the Irredeemable, Incorruptible stuff. I've been a big fan of Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, those last two 8-issue series, and I'm looking forward to them getting an ongoing. And the Hercules Twilight of a God is the old Leighton, Ron Lim style, you know, space Hercules from Marvel. And it's just a lot of fun. So we figured we'd do those since some of that's just stuff we can't talk about every time.
That's cool.
So beyond that, same old, you know, just trying to keep things going, trying to, again, catch up on my reading. I got way behind between going off for San Diego and just things piling up, so I'm hoping to, you know, kind of catch up on all of that. I'm getting pretty close. I've got this week's and then about a dozen or so other things. And a couple of mini-series that have just piled up to where it's like, well, hell, I could have just gotten the trade paperback at this point if I'd wanted to. But I like the monthly issues. I'm happy with my purchases. But it's going to take me a while to catch up on, like, the Wildstorm universe, the Radical Output,
right.
Some of that stuff. So always plenty of stuff to be reading. Because once I get through all of that, I got a couple of, you know, older series that I want to start catching up on.
Right, right.
True Story, Swear to God, Girls, Elephant Men, all kinds of stuff. So
much to read.
Yep, so much to read, so little time.
Ugh, I know.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, man. I think we're done. Good episode
cool.
This week.
Great episode. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.